Coming up on Golf Today, the underdog does it again. Brian Campbell, who surprised many by winning in Mexico earlier this year, validates that win with a victory at the John Deere on Sunday. What does this say about the determination from Campbell, who is the shortest hitter on the PGA Tour? On the ladies' side, it's a major week. The world's best are in France for the Amundi Evian Championship. Bethann Nichols stops by to go over the storylines heading into the fourth of five women's majors this year. Plus, it's a special week for those participating in the U.S. Adaptive Open. We will take you to Woodmont Country Club to check in on these inspiring athletes. All that and more next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hi there, thanks for teaming up with us here on this Monday edition of Golf Today. What a day we have planned for you. I am Todd Lewis, and I'm proud to be sitting beside the franchise that is our friend and colleague, original hire here at the Golf Channel, Richie Lerner. Dickie, good to hang
Welcome
with you
to
on
the,
this Monday.
Welcome to the quarter zip report. Here it is.
We're going to need them next week. Because,
by the way, this weekend I had more hot dogs than I had birdies. It's never good. I got a lesson just a few days ago. I'm ready to give it back.
All right.
I'm back where I'm a little more comfortable. Talking golf versus playing it these days.
Yeah, still not a fan of potato salad, by the way.
No,
still
you don't like a nice potato salad?
Yes, no, give me a hot dog, hamburger, baked beans, fries. I'm good to go.
Dog, brown mustard. Do not go with the yellow mustard. I can't accept that. I'm a brown mustard guy, a little sauerkraut, and a soft bun, steamed soft bun. The golf, by the way, this past weekend, I enjoyed it. Yeah. And I don't think every week on tour, I know we're clamoring for stars, and stars make the difference, but you know, in a long Major League Baseball season, every now and then, you know, you get Kansas City against Minnesota. Not every night is going to be the Dodgers against the Yankees. In a long NBA season, you get Sacramento against the Charlotte.
Right.
If you love the game and it's competitive and exciting at the end, you're locked in. Good buddy of mine who watches golf just about every weekend, Billy Gilbert, call him Gilly. He texted me late yesterday. He said, I'm enjoying this. I don't need the big names. Just make it close and exciting. And that was the case with John Deere, I think.
Yeah, and you know, well, you're an NBA guy. Sometimes it's not always the Lakers and the Celtics. Sometimes you have Oklahoma City who can win a championship. Brian Campbell joins an interesting list of players, an eclectic list of players. Of course, Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, three-time winners on the PGA Tour. They are giants in the game. But Ryan Fox, after finally finding a residence here in the United States, has a little more peace, and now he's won twice on the PGA Tour. Sepp Straka is a proven winner. He's a two-time winner. And now Brian Campbell joins this list. It has been an impressive week, an impressive year for Campbell. And here's what he had to say after that victory.
Oh, it's awesome. I've never, you know, had this much support at any golf tournament. And so I never knew it would be this awesome to, you know, feel the crowd out there and get it done in that fashion.
Earlier, you were talking about trusting the process. What has that been like after you captured your first victory and had a little bit of lull battling some illnesses, but to be back in the winner's circle so soon?
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge. After your first win, there's, you know, I'd say a lot of expectations that come about. Unfortunately, I dealt with a lot of, you know, random sicknesses that hit me and pulled me out of a few tournaments I really wanted to play. And even more so, I just really had to trust what I had been doing before. And man, and now we're here. It's just wild.
Ryan, I was talking to Kelsey about you being a poster child for perseverance. You talk about earning your card a decade ago, losing it in 2017, relegated to the Korn Ferry Tour, the injuries, the illnesses, getting it back 2 years ago, winning this year. What does it mean?
It means everything. This is what I've worked my entire life to be in this position. And unfortunately, we had a couple years there where it wasn't looking so good. You know, you have to start thinking about, am I going to do something else? Maybe pro golf or this route's not going to work out, but it really was all at second stage Q school. About 2 or 3 years ago, I made like a quintuple bogey on a par three, and I thought my career was over in that moment. And that night, just kind of had a self talk with myself and said, you know what, whatever happens is okay. Trust yourself. And next round, I went out there and shot 8 under and got myself right back in there. And I guess I was like, maybe golf's not over for me. And that at that moment was when everything changed.
Well, not unlike the J.J. Spawn story, feast or famine for Brian Campbell. He missed 7 cuts, withdrawn twice. Nothing better than 32nd, except for the 2 wins. So right course, right tournament. He has shown if he gets a sniff, he can win. Calling card is accuracy, and he's a pretty good putter. 2 wins for a guy who's 172nd strokes gained off the tee, 174 driving distance at 276 yards per pop. That is unusual. It's a matter of timing, a little bit of luck, that ball bouncing off the tree in Mexico and making the most of your chances. I will say he has to improve his performance off the tee if he hopes to have staying power. T. Lou, I think there are probably 100 guys you've never heard of playing professional golf that think they're the next Brian Campbell, who've had a Brian Campbell experience, injuries, nearly gave it up, but they stay with it knowing that that's possible. With one tweak, find a new putter, maybe a new swing thought, and it all changes. And that's why I said I think we heard a similar story with J.J. Spawn, who just won the U.S. Open. They all believe somewhere in their heart of hearts, I'm the next Spawn, I'm the next Brian Campbell.
But you know what's interesting is that even when their cage is getting rattled and doubt becomes a friend of theirs, they still somehow find that belief. And you heard what Brian was talking about, how he persevered. He was the low amateur at the 2015 U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, played at Illinois, great player, got his Korn Ferry Tour card in 2016, graduated to the PGA Tour after his performance in 2016. On the tour in 2017, lost his card, and then from 18 to 21 went back to the Korn Ferry Tour, actually lost his Korn Ferry Tour card, and somehow got it back, and then made his way back to the PGA Tour, and here he is now, a two-time winner in 2025. That is belief. That is perseverance. And you talk about battling doubt, also knowing that in this modern era of golf where power is everything.
That's a good point.
He's 174th in distance off the tee. That is more than 50 yards behind the guy who is leading the PGA Tour in average distance, and that's Audric Pottengater. And by the way, who did he beat in Mexico? Audric Pottengater.
So you have to make the most of your opportunities. For shorter players, there are some golf courses where you can get after it. I'm thinking about Wildlife, the Sony Open. Pebble Beach is not overly long. Hilton Head is a point-to-point
Colonial.
Golf course. Colonial. So I think it's important that the tour continue to offer those opportunities so that it is not just simply a bomb and gouge game. We do know at the highest levels, the most meaningful championships over the long haul, longer hitters will win the most tournaments. But J.J. Spawn won the U.S. Open at Oakmont. He's not short, but he's certainly not in the McIlroy League. But I thought this was, this was a great win. And these are guys, these are guys who need it. This can change the course of their lives, their careers. So I, people look at me funny when I say that for, say, David Lipsky, the John Deere is as big as the Masters was for Rory McIlroy.
I agree. And it's not only like for Brian Campbell, who, by the way, is pretty much a lock. He's had to work very hard not to finish outside the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings now, which is going to set him up in all the signature events for next year. But you mentioned all these great players. Ryan Fox, we talked about him.
Yeah.
But you look at the run right now that the PGA Tour is on.
It's a good one.
Without these superstars, these mega stars that are dominating the storylines. I mean, here is Ryan Fox. Here's a guy who graduated to the from the DP World Tour, a very established winner on that tour, struggled after making it onto the PGA Tour, but he's found his form and now a two-time winner, that great playoff run.
That's one of the shots of the year
right
there. He called it the shot of his life.
And then you see,
speaking of shots, I would say this guy hit 3 of the greatest shots in U.S. Open history. The drive at 17, the tee ball at 18. There's no margin for error. You miss a fairway at Oakmont, you pay a big price. And then the 64-footer for the cheese. 2 putts to win. He does it in 1, but that was very 3-puttable. We were at the Travelers, and this was electric. Miss a New England guy back home. He'd won it 2 years ago. Looked to be out of it. stuffs it on the final hole, and I mean the lid came off that place. They were going bananas.
And why wouldn't he? The U.S. Ryder Cup captain has put himself into the conversation about being a playing captain, and that is a very strong conversation that we will talk about later on Golf Today, Rich and I.
Some people had a little bit of an issue saying maybe overreacted at the expense of
some
people. But I don't understand that. That was good theater, and that was an authentic reaction. Then Pat Keeter, fifth extra hole in Detroit.
Yeah, this is a guy who he has a short legacy as an amateur on the Korn Ferry Tour, and now he is an established winner on the PGA Tour. Yeah, I think golf is in a great spot. The PGA Tour is trending.
Why do you think we're seeing, you know, this run of really great finishes? You know, I mean, I don't know if there's a theory behind it, but just curious. You are out there. You talk to players more than anybody.
Well, at first, the depth on the PGA Tour from number one to 150, it's not off that much. I mean, it is so strong, the PGA Tour is. And I think you're seeing that in the fact that these players that may not be superstars, may not be top 10 players, are still very much a positive force on the world stage. And I think, just like we talked about earlier in the show, I think that fans are hungry for being introduced to other possible stars in the making. Ryan Fox could be a star in the making. Brian Campbell could be a star in the making. Who knows? You know, Jordan Spieth started somewhere. Rory McIlroy started somewhere. So we shall see where this takes us.
I was playing some golf this weekend. You know, I think it's as simple as this. You hear, you know, amateur golfers, rec golfers, my pals say, you know, after the round's over, we play you by teat, I'm going to go home and watch some golf. They don't say I'm going to go home and watch Brian Campbell or Aldrich Potgieter. Sure. They say I'm going to watch some golf. When I grew up, my mom and dad, you know, huge golfers, would say, put the golf on. The only time that ever changed was when Tiger came along. They would say, hey, is Tiger on? Mm-hmm. Put Tiger on. But put the golf on. And it, in lieu of the big names that, you know, I think everybody would concede they like to see, McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler, you want the golf to be compelling and exciting. And if you're introduced to new characters along the way and they have a good story, even better. But ultimately what you want is an exciting finish. And I think, you know, that's what the tour's delivered. And back to our earlier point, not every, you know, week is going to be, I'll go old school, Ollie Frazier, but you just want it to be competitive and compelling. And I think the tour can feel really good that they've delivered that in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and now we go to the other side of the Atlantic, where we'll have some great storylines for the Scottish Open. We're going to talk about that. And, of course, we're going into the Open the following week. Let's check out the latest Comcast Business Tour Top 10, which awards consistent and reliable play throughout the season. And, of course, Scottie Scheffler leading the way with his great victories in 2025. Rory right behind him, three-time winner. There's the Sepp Straka. All the way down to Tommy Fleetwood. Doesn't have a win on the PGA Tour, but currently inside the top 10. The regular season ends at the Wyndham Championship. Still ahead on Golf Today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, Todd. This is a special week in golf. It's the fourth edition of the U.S. Adaptive Open. It's underway at Woodmont in Maryland. Two of the best golfers in the world competing in different impairment categories with a chance at a national championship. Inspiring stuff, and highlights are on the way.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, this week marks the fourth edition of the U.S. Adaptive Open. Now, this championship was developed to fulfill a pledge by the USGA to establish a championship for the adaptive community, showcasing the sport's inclusivity. Woodmont Country Club in Rockville, Maryland is the host this week. All right, let's take a look at some of the notes from this wonderful championship. 96 players in the field, 8 different impairment categories. It's open to any professional or amateur golfer with a handicap index not exceeding 36.4. 54 hole event, top 20 in ties for the men, top 10 in ties for the women. Cut will be made after 36 holes.
I think this is one of the most significant initiatives ever put forward by the United States Golf Association. It's not about limitations, but inspiration. And the winner, walking away with a gold medal and the trophy, exempt into the next 5. Get your name inscribed on a plaque and exemption into next year's U.S. Adaptive Open. That's up for grabs for all category winners. Andy Stevenson has more than 20 years of experience working in television and radio with a focus on sports. Presented for BBC TV and radio, NBC Sports, Golf Channel, the RNA, Sky Sports, and others. Born without arms, but with a full heart and an abundance of guts, belief, and talent. He is our man on the ground this week at the U.S. Adaptive Open. Andy, great to see you. How exciting is it to have a week like this in golf?
Oh, thank you. It's great to be back. It's great to be back at the U.S. Adaptive Open, the fourth time this tournament's been held, the first time here at the amazing Woodmont Country Club. As you can see, I've got the trophies either side of me. And you mentioned 96 players taking part this week, 96 players from 10 different countries. And essentially, this is a major championship. It's unusual, obviously, because all of the players have disabilities. The men and women are playing alongside each other. There are some professionals. The majority of the players are amateurs. So, of course, there are differences from the majors we're used to seeing. But this is a big, big deal, and everybody's thrilled to be here.
Yeah, kind of expand, if you would, on that, Andy. How would you describe the significance of an event like the U.S. Adaptive Open?
Well, you've just seen her in the highlights reel, Bailey Bish, last year's women's champion. She spoke very movingly at the players' dinner on Saturday night. She told a story of how a man watched our coverage on the Golf Channel of this tournament last year on the television. He had just been in a road accident and he was desperate to get back to playing golf and watching this tournament, watching Bailey win that title last year. He got in touch with her and she basically, and this tournament inspired him to know that he could pick up some golf clubs again and play this great game again. So I think that's just a little example of how important this tournament is and the global coverage we're giving it.
Andy, what's important for people watching and just people in general to understand about folks who've had challenges in their lives? What do you think you'd like people to better understand?
Well, I think you've probably had a glimpse of it in the highlights reel there. You know, we have players here with a whole range of impairments, players playing from a seated position, standing up, maybe missing limbs, having some kind of vision impairment. You know, there are some amazing things you see out there. The message of this tournament is that it's an elite tournament, but it's also a championship that shows that golf is for everyone. And I think the other important thing to say is that there have been renovations here at Woodmont a couple of years ago, and a lot of those renovations to the course have been with hosting this tournament in mind. They have made differences and changes to tee boxes and greens and a whole raft of other changes they've made, all to help the accessibility of this golf course and put Woodmont in a position to host this tournament, which of course they're doing this week and will do again this time next summer.
Andy, these athletes, they're so inspiring, and you spoke on that. I want to commend you. You're inspiring as well, and you're part of the fiber of this championship as a journalist. So I want to get your take. What are you most looking forward to this week?
Well, interestingly, one of the things I'm most looking forward to, and I know for a fact it's something that the players are really looking forward to as well, and everyone connected with this championship, is the live coverage we're going to be giving this championship for the very first time. So on Wednesday afternoon, we will be showing the conclusion of this championship live for the very first time on Golf Channel. And that's huge for these players, especially the amateurs, some of whom have come through regional qualifying to be here. They're used to competing with perhaps a few spectators watching them, maybe just family and friends. And suddenly they're going to be live on the Golf Channel in front of millions of people on Wednesday afternoon. So, as I say, I know from speaking to the players, that means an incredible amount to them. And I'm certainly looking forward to it. It's going to be uncharted territory for all of us. But I think you're going to see some amazing golf, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure you will tell the viewers all the great storylines here in this wonderful championship. Andy Stevenson, thank you so much for joining us. He'll join us a little later on Golf Today.
Thanks, Andy.
More. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Just a few weeks ago in broiling Frisco, Texas, Minjee Lee handled those tough scoring conditions. Final round of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. 2 over 74. That was good enough for her third career major title. Takes her to a whole new level. Legitimately great player. Major winner so far in 2025. Al Saigo in the Chevron. Maya Stark, U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills. That was her first major title. And then Minji in the Lone Star State. So they play five majors. This is number four, still with the AIG Women's Open to be played. It is the Evian Championship in France, a beautiful spot. Live first round coverage this Thursday, 6 a.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. And for more on this week's Evian Championship, pleased to say hello to our friend, Golf Week senior writer, Beth Ann Nichols. And Beth Ann, thank you for joining us today. I just want to kind of get your thoughts on the 2025 season to this point. We've had 18 different winners on tour this year. You think there's room for another this week. So who do you have your eyes on?
Well, it's remarkable. It couldn't be a bigger contrast to last year, where we saw the top four players in the world combine for 15 titles. And so far, those four players have only won twice. So I'm looking to who can continue this streak of 18 different winners. And I think Heijin Choi has to be someone that we look at. Obviously, just finished runner-up very recently at the Meyer LPGA Classic to Carlotta Segonda. And recently was playing in the final group at the KPMG Women's PGA alongside eventual winner Minji Lee and a Taya Tedekun, of course, is now known as Gino. And they had a beautiful moment there in 18 where they've got their arms around each other. Heijin's looking for her first victory on the LPGA, and Gino was looking for her first major title. But dating back to this time last year, Heijin Choi has four top 10 finishes in the majors. She finished in the top 10 at Evian last year, and her last four starts on the LPGA have all been top 10 finishes. So I think she's definitely due. We first really got a look at her in 2017 at the U.S. Women's Open when she finished runner-up as a 17-year-old, and it's hard to believe that she's almost 26 and still waiting on her first LPGA title. And I can't mention Heijin Choi without talking about her caddy, Pete Godfrey, because every time I see her on the board, I'm getting excited because, of course, Pete is married to former LPGA player Jane Park. And I look at the amount of money that's on the table for major winners, and I think about how much a big check could go toward medical expenses for their daughter, Grace. And I can't help but really root for them and what that can mean for the family.
Yeah, it'll mean a lot more than just the player who wins. The caddies, other team members, it benefits them as well. Let's talk about the world's top player, the needle mover, at least the American needle mover, and that is Nelly Korda. She's searching for yet another major championship. Came close in the U.S. Women's Open. What do you make of where she is with her game right now?
Well, I keep saying I don't feel like we need to hit the panic button or anything with Nelly Korda. When you look statistically, yeah, she's down a little bit in greens and regulation and putting. But I think, you know, we saw this tremendous ball striking display at the U.S. Women's Open, and anyone who watched that tournament just feels like, you know, she's just one big momentum putt away from her season really changing. She's not making those putts that really matter. And so I think if she can just get, you know, one or two of those to fall, that we might see, you know, a Scottie Scheffler-like run again, you know, where Scottie got off to a slow start on the PGA Tour this year and then won three or four starts, including a major. And we could definitely see Nelly do that. At this time last year, going into the Evian, we were all wondering about this mysterious dog bite that she suffered from right after missing the cut at the KPMG Women's PGA in Seattle. And I've noticed over the years that Nelly tends to play her injuries and illnesses a little close to the vest. And we don't really realize how serious or bad they are, even though any kind of dog bite sounds traumatizing. But she posted a picture recently, a year later, of what that dog bite looked like. And my initial reaction was, holy smokes, it was pretty gruesome. And so, it was a lot worse than I think I had in my mind. But of course, you know, with a dog bite comes, you know, more in terms of medical attention and what she needed to get in shape to play for the Evian. So nothing crazy has happened so far this year. We're just waiting for her to win.
We mentioned Minji Lee. You win three majors. You're a big-time player. What do you think the ceiling is for Minji? How much more do you think she has in her?
Well, she's always been one of the best ball strikers on tour. And then, of course, now she's got that long putter going, and she has confidence again throughout her bag. And I think what really struck me, you guys know when you ask questions in a press conference, the guy beside me, you know, says after she wins the KPMG Women's PGA, he says, you know, what's next for you? You know, what big goals do you have? And she says, well, the Evian is next. And I guess that's what's, you know, I'm just going to stick to my process, you know, kind of a bland answer. And then a few minutes later, somebody asks the same question in a slightly different way. And she says, yeah, I want to be in the LPGA Hall of Fame. That's the reason I took up golf. That was my goal right from the start. I really was inspired by what Lydia Ko has done. And I want to do the same thing. And right now she's halfway there in points. She has 14 of the 27 points that you need. So, you know, she's 29 years old. It's gonna take a lot of great golf to get there. But I like that she's saying that big goal out loud and admitting that it's been the goal from the very beginning.
Bethann, I'm not sure we're going to see much of this in France, but there are a couple of seminal stars in the field this week from FSU I'm talking about, one making her LPGA Tour debut and another who just won an LET event as an amateur. What can you tell us about Maribel Tang and Lottie Woad?
Well, Lottie Woad absolutely dominated in Ireland. She won by six. She's only 2 points shy of getting her LPGA card in the Tour's new LEAP program. And she could do that this week. She's playing in the Evian, as you said, and a top 25 finish there would give her the 2 points needed to secure her card. If she makes the cut, she'll get 1 point. And then she'll go on and she'll play in the AIG Women's Open in a couple weeks' time. And if she still needs another point, she could make the cut and get that there. You know, so even though she couldn't take her paycheck here in Ireland, she's looking ahead toward, you know, the future and securing that card. And head coach Amy Bond will be in France this week cheering on, you know, both of her players. And Mirabel Ting will be making her pro debut this week in France. And I actually talked to Mirabel last week as she was about to announce the decision. And, of course, she's the Annika Award winner. She finished her college season ranked with 80 under par total, which is just an insane number under par. She's a beautiful ball striker, just like Lottie, an incredible, consistent player. And Mirabel was waiting to share the news of her decision to turn pro with her grandfather. She was waiting on a graphic from FSU to come through. That's what she was going to share with the world. And she wanted her grandfather, who was ailing, and she wanted him to see that graphic first so that his dream of her playing on the LPGA was going to come true. And he passed away over the weekend. And so she will be playing in his honor, in his memory this week, along with her late father and her late grandmother. She said to me, this week isn't about money, even though I can earn my first paycheck. It's about playing for those who got me here and who made me who I am.
These two superstars in the making, possibly. Don't want to put that much pressure on them, but they have a lot of great amateur potential, and we shall see. And Bethann, as always, we appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Golf Today.
And hello again and welcome, Rich Schlerter. Pleased to be alongside Todd Lewis. Lots to play for here in 2025. Great event, the Genesis Scottish Open. Field is stacked. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, keep going down the list. And then we have the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. We're on our way in just a few days. Down the road in September after the FedEx Cup playoffs, it's the Ryder Cup. And you know what's the hot topic of conversation in our game right now. What is it?
Is Keegan Bradley going to be on that team as a playing captain? Well, it's a great conversation because of what happened here at the Travelers.
If this guy were named John Smith, you'd say, yeah, he's on our team. Oh, wait a minute. You mean he went to St. John's in the New York area? He knows Beth Page Black? He's fiery the way you want a guy to be in the Ryder Cup? Yeah, that's my guy. We're taking him. Keegan is currently ninth in points, top six, automatically qualify. They'll be set after the
BMW.
Okay, FedEx Cup playoffs, that's next month. And then Keegan will have six picks at his disposal. So I felt this way for quite some time. I think he should be the first playing captain since Arnold Palmer in 1963. He fits the bill. He fits the bill statistically. He's seventh in the world, Todd.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Strokes gain this and strokes gain that. He's got all of it. And then with the intangibles, he's the American Ian Poulter. This is a guy you want who will rile up the New York crowds. And I think the way this could go is, I think he could sit out the morning session. He could set the lineups the night before. He could assess what's happening during the morning rounds, make the lineups for the afternoon, be a part of those afternoon lineups, and then get together with his assistant captains. He has some good ones. He has Jim Furyk, who has a lot of experience, and then just go get a point. I'm all for it. I think it'd be a great story as well, but I think he absolutely belongs on that team on merit, and I think you can make it work with all the backroom stuff. Make a couple of speeches, delegate to your assistants, meet with the media, and then go do your job. Go play some ball.
Well, I first and foremost, let me say that I think Keegan Bradley is an absolute joy to cover. He is an incredible player, an even better person. We saw the class that he exemplifies when he did not get picked for Rome. I'm going to agree with you. I think he is a great player. There's no question in my mind he's one of the top 12 American players and should be on that Ryder Cup team as a player. My question to you, Rich, where is Keegan Bradley best served, as a player or as a captain? If you had to pick either or, which would he be?
I don't think you need to pick. As a player at this point, but I think he can reasonably do both. I've never been inside a team room. I don't know all of the logistics and the complications that arise. But I think if you're organized and you have a good plan and you delegate, I think you can do it. Tiger did it, by the way. I know it's not apples to apples. He did it at the President's Cup successfully. I know the Americans win that all the time. In 2019 down in Australia. It can be done, and I think Keegan can do it.
Well, look, I think Keegan can do it, but I'm just saying it's going to be incredibly challenging. And I will say this because it takes such tremendous focus, and for Keegan Bradley especially, it takes tremendous energy and emotion that he is going to bring on the golf course as a player. And I feel like it's very challenging. I'm not saying he can't do it, but it's going to be very challenging for him to have that same emotion off the golf course that he's going to have on the golf course. Well, here's a thought. I mean, Jim Furyk is going to be a key cog here. There's no doubt about it, if he indeed is a playing captain. Jim Furyk is somebody that Keegan Bradley very much looks up to. He's been in the battles of the Ryder Cup as a player and as a captain and will be in Keegan's ear no matter what route he takes, if he's going to be a playing captain or just a captain. But I'm just concerned if he is a captain, a playing captain, will that inhibit his ability on the golf course? That's the only concern I have. Not saying he can't do it. But, you know, here's a thought. Should the PGA of America say, hey, Keegan, you're such a great player. We're going to give you another captaincy down the road. We need you as a player only.
That's a reasonable thought. But it's not the best story.
Well, no, it would not be the best story.
We want Keegan as playing captain. This is a formidable challenge. The European team, I think, is stacked. And I think is poised to win on American soil, which they have not done since Medina in 2012. Keegan was a big part of that. He had been playing great, and then for mysterious reasons, Mickelson lobbied to sit down in that afternoon after they'd won 7 and 6, Phil and Keegan. Still can't make sense of that. But I'll repeat. I think if he is organized, leans on his assistants, is in the role of captain, not playing in the morning session, assess the playing field, what's happening, make your decisions, huddle with your captains, and then go out in the afternoon, fire up those New York crowds, do what you do. Excellent ball hitter. Again, knows that course, having played at St. John's.
Great play.
I think it'd be an enormous asset for the United States team. And then I think when he's done, he can handle all of his duties as a captain. Give a speech, get ready for the next day.
He has to play on Sunday. Has to play on Sunday, so we will see. Yeah, so I mean, I was like, to monitor the team and it could happen. I'm not saying it could.
Look, to me, the most important part of being a captain is to select, make sure you have the 12 best guys, period. After that, you're mixing and matching, but you have all the data gurus now at your disposal. They'll help you determine which are the best teams to put out there. You need to go in highly organized, detailed plan, and then just go execute. I think he has to be a part of that plan for the United States team to have its best chance to win.
Lots to talk about leading up to Bethpage, including an opportunity for Keegan Bradley at the Open. Before that, the Rich, it's where we're going?
Well, it's the Rolex Series, continuing with the Genesis Scottish Open, a Renaissance Club in North Berwick. It's a great spot in Scotland. The biggest stars are there. This is a great way to tune up for Royal Portrush. You can catch live first round coverage beginning Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. How about the field, T. Lou?
Yeah, I mean, great players. I mean, this is one of the strongest fields on the PGA Tour so far in 2025. You see all the stars that are there, including Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Robert McIntyre, of course, the defending champion. He is Scottish. Who can forget what he did last year at this duly sanctioned event with the DP World Tour? And for more on this week, we say hello to GolfChannel.com senior writer Rex Hoggard, who is in Scotland this week. Tell you what, we're going to jump away from Keegan Bradley and start with Rory McIlroy. He's obviously, since the Masters, he's had some interesting on and off the course thoughts, actions, you would say, and you know, certain references to the media. What do you think his headspace is right now, Rex, heading into this championship?
Well, Todd, I don't know if you're going to be surprised by this, but I just got to Scotland, just made it up to North Berwick for this week's Scottish Open, as you pointed out. And it just started raining and the wind's blowing. So we're going to get exactly what we've come to expect from the Scottish Open. Rory is such a fascinating character this season on the PGA Tour. To be so dominant, to be able to accomplish what he did at the Masters after more than a decade of that incredible weight on his shoulders, to win his first green jacket, to do what he did and complete the career Grand Slam. And we've talked a lot the last few weeks about some of those issues you've addressed. First off, that he doesn't particularly seem all that pleased to talk to some of the members of the media. I think that's important to point out, that he seems fine with a lot of the normal golf media. It's some of the things that go on outside. I think the other half of this is, and I'm going to counter this and maybe hopefully so, and say that this week, the Scottish Open, and certainly next week, the Open Championship in Northern Ireland, we know what that means to him, that if anything's going to break him out of, let's call it a funk, if anything is going to get him motivated again to go back to work, to go back to the drawing board, to start working out, to start preparing for a major championship, it's going to be these next 2 weeks. He's coming off a victory here 2 years ago at the Renaissance Club. We know how much his game suits this type of golf. He's learned, as he's gotten more mature, how to flight the ball a little bit better, how to play better in the wind. And then looking ahead to next week, he's talked very passionately about the idea of getting to the top of the mountain. It's hard to move on. It's something that I can't even empathize with, because it's hard for me to wrap my mind around what it must feel like to accomplish what was your career goal at such a young age. But if anything can do it, it's going to be the next 2 weeks.
Think about it. He has a chance to complete what would be one of the most consequential seasons in the history of the game. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's somewhere on that list, having just become the sixth to win the career Grand Slam with the Masters. But if he goes home to Northern Ireland, where he was born and raised, and wins the Open at Portrush, then that's something extra special. I just want to follow up on something you said, because I had trouble wrapping my head around it. You said he seems to be okay with some of the media, but not others. You specify, Rex, what you mean by that.
I really can't, because this came from his words, not mine, when he spoke to the media a few weeks ago, saying that there are certain things that he just doesn't like to address right now, whether that's about his personal life, whether that's things outside of golf. But he's always been one of the most accommodating players in the game. I think Todd Lewis covers the game more than any of us, and he'll attest to that, that when it comes to being forthright with the media, when it comes to being accommodating with the media, he's always been at the, let's call it, the sharp end of the spear. I think what has happened since the Masters is he's probably gotten a little overwhelmed. I will say, I was at the Zurich Classic. I was the Golf Central reporter that week, and I was anticipating maybe a more standoffish Rory McIlroy that week, just because of everything that he had gone through since winning the Masters and the career Grand Slam. That wasn't the case at all. He was very relaxed. He was fun. He was having a good time. He was playing golf with his best friend, Shane Lowry. But as the weeks have gone by, I think these things start to pile up. And I always go back to the idea that this was one of the most underrated parts of Tiger Woods' career when he was in his prime, that he did this week in and week out. And I think Rory can attest to how difficult that actually is.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And I agree with you. He is very accommodating, very candid, very honest. And leading up to the PGA Championship, where he stiff-armed the media that entire, well, those four rounds, I should say, the Truist Championship, he was very much engaged with the media, talking about his game. Gave me a live first tee interview right prior to his third round on Saturday. So that's, I think, what makes this the most surprising, that how he has looked at the media recently over the last month and a half?
Look, I mean, it should have been a feel-good victory tour. Forget the results, coming off of what he did at the Masters. But then we had the non-conforming driver. He didn't like the way that was handled. There are reports out there that there's a book in the works about Rory that, you know, you may have thrown him off balance. But in any event, I'm told he had been working out at Queenwood, practicing back in London where he's he got a home, moving back there, and that all's well in the Rory camp.
Good.
He's in a good spot right now, and he needs to be because I think he understands the importance of what's ahead next week. Didn't work out in 2019, and the emotion hit him. Remember, he opened with, 79, then came back and missed the cut by one, played a great second round. But the emotion hit him of playing back home and all the love and support that he got. Xander Schauffele's the defending Open champion, won the Scottish back in 2022. Just sort of what's your big picture thought on Xander in 2025, Rex?
Rich, this is going to be fun. Remember when we spent maybe the first third of the season talking about what's wrong with Scottie Scheffler? He wasn't the same Scottie Scheffler that we anticipated when he finished up last season. Well, now we're two-thirds of the season, and maybe even more than that, and we're still waiting to see that Xander Schauffele, the Xander Schauffele who won the Open last year, that won two major championships, that seemed like he was going to be the guy that was going to take on Scottie Scheffler, and we're continuing to wait. If you look at it statistically, you don't need Brandel Chamblee to break this one down. He's not driving the ball very well. He's ranked well outside the top 100 in the world in strokes gained driving, and he's not putting the ball very well outside the top 100 in strokes gained putting. Those are the two things that seemed to separate him last year, certainly at those two major championships that he won. I'll go back to the idea that he has had success on this golf course. Go back 3 years, he won here. That was almost a bit of a spark for him, I argued at the time, because it took him out of his comfort zone. This was a different style of golf. You remember that week, it was really windy. The winning score was single digits under par. He sort of had to play a different style of game, and you saw a different Xander after that. I'm not saying it's going to happen this week, but there is nothing separating Xander this year than last year, other than those two stats I pointed out. But he has just one top 10 finish, no missed cuts, but he hasn't been the same Xander.
Yeah, it's not, but he seems like just one good swing away from taking off.
It's close to being, if not quite a lost season, than a disappointing season. I know he had the injury in the rib area early, and that can be difficult to deal with, but he has said for some time now that that's not an issue. I'm surprised, frankly, that he hasn't pulled it together. Well, he played so well last year with his two majors, but anyway. It's going to be a great week, Rex. You have a stacked field. We didn't even talk about Scottie Scheffler yet, did we?
We didn't, and I think everyone expects the same out of Scottie Scheffler. Yeah. Ever since he got over that offseason injury with his hand, we saw the same guy, that the ball-striking machine, the guy that if he putts decent, you know he's going to be in the mix. It will be interesting because I love the idea of what the Scottish Open has become. In golf, and at least on the men's side, you don't have a better tune-up for a major championship than this week at the Scottish Championship. You really don't have an opportunity to do that at the Masters or the other majors. So it's going to be fun to watch all the top players.
No drama, Scottie. Right shot, Scotty. He consistently hits that right shot. Rex, we enjoyed the pod this morning with Lav. I know you've been working hard. A little rest, maybe go to a little chippy takeaway.
Enjoy the haggis. I hear it's good there.
I'll have to take your word for it.
I don't know anybody in our business that does haggis. I just nobody can get over that hump. Maybe we're missing something.
No, we're not. No, we're fine.
It's 11 a.m. Eastern time, and then Friday same time, and then an hour earlier on the weekend. That's a good one. The Genesis Scottish Open. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, and Bob McIntyre is the defending champion.